710 ESPN from the CarMax studios at LA Live.
This is Mason in Ireland.
We cannot wait to have the NFL back in LA. They will be playing in a brand new state-of-the-art facility in City of Industry, and one of the guys behind that is John Semkin, who joins us right now. And John, which team is it? Which team is coming? And when is the first game?
And can I buy season tickets right now while you're here? Can I cut you a check?
I don't know, and no. But we can. You know what? The funny thing you say about season tickets, we have had over 210,000 requests.
Now, where do those requests go? Like, if I wanted to be 2011,
And that's just for individual tickets. So if you wanted to buy.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, how do I do that?
You just go to the website, www.losangelesfootballstadium.com.
Okay, and you guys are already taking a waiting list.
Yeah. All
right, so where do we stand now? Last time we had John, it was over the phone, and you talked about the fact that the legal hurdles had been cleared. Is that still the case? Are there any more legal hurdles in your way?
There is no more legal hurdles, and that's one thing I don't think people realize. To get past the environmental challenges to build a project like this in California is extraordinary.
And you, because I'm friends with you, you've told me over the years that that's been the main reason we don't have a pro football team in a new stadium, because that is such a monumental thing. To get it, it just takes time, and you know, people forget, 94. I mean, John, it's been 15 full years since we've had a team here.
And you know, Ed Roski and I have been working on it since 96.
Wow.
And so it's been 13 years, you know, 5 years at the Coliseum, and then we took a little bit of a breather, and then now here at the City of Industry site. So it's been, you know, thank God for Ed Roski, because what he's doing in terms of not giving up is extraordinary.
Right. We should give a shout-out to our sometimes embattled Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, who the last time we talked to you, mm-hmm. he had just terminated.
He terminated the lawsuit.
The
yes.
frivolous lawsuit from the NIMBY people out there in Walnut, California, which was a great move for obviously helpful to you, but a great move for all of us, I think.
By the way, NIMBY is short for not in my backyard. They're the people who never wanted to do anything.
Yeah, the Walnutians were pursuing that.
Well, and not just the governor, by the way. We got 55-17 vote in the assembly and a 21-7 vote in the Senate. And so it was bipartisan all the way, and the governor was the final call, you know. And so when he got out there and signed the bill, it was
if you
huge.
Go on YouTube, there's the governor making the announcement, and there's John Semkin right in the background,
just like he is in the movie Top Gun, right there in the background, back when he was advising for that movie when you were in the Navy. So best case scenario.
Walk
me through the steps. What would you like to happen next?
Best case scenario is we buy a team, you know, in March,
right,
and they play in the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum next September.
For 1 year or 2 years?
We'll open the new stadium in 2013. Realistically, the team will move here in 2011,
okay,
play 2 years in the Rose Bowl or the Coliseum, and then move into our new building 2013.
But okay. Wait a minute, John. If you bought a team in March of 2010...
Right.
They can't go back to where their regular city. They've
no, they're gonna move. They're gonna move the day before
in 2000.
Right, right.
In 2010, though, right? You said
right.
2011. So
no. You asked me best case, and then I said realistic.
Okay,
best
so,
case is 2010.
Gotcha.
Okay, and conversations have commenced with the teams that we've talked about many times now: Jaguars, Rams, Vikings. Saints, I think, are out of that now. San Francisco, Raiders.
Chargers.
Am I missing anybody?
Did you say seven? Did he count seven? I think
yeah.
That's
yeah,
I think. Yeah. And he said Saints are out. Are the Saints out?
Jacksonville, Buffalo, Minnesota, St. Louis, and the three California teams.
Yeah, so Saints are no longer on your list.
Correct. Saints signed a lease.
So who are you talking to the most? Like, who's got the inside track here?
He tries to make nine end arounds every time you come in.
No, I love him. I do. I just,
yeah.
You know.
Because I want to know what team so I can start wearing, like, the jersey.
You know, John, that is actually, like, Danny Ayala, who's one of the photographers for KCAL, who you've met, Steve, is a diehard, for some reason, Jaguars fan. Always has been.
Yeah.
And he feels like...
Steve Bruin, you like Jones Drew? You can bring him back.
Yeah. And Del Rio.
And Jack Del Rio.
Who's an SC guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's funny. He's already kind of, you know, buying more gear.
I follow the Jaguars a little bit closer just because I think they seem like the obvious choice because the population, I think, is like 60,000 in Jacksonville, and they haven't sold out a game.
It dropped down to like 19.
They haven't sold out a game in like 3 years.
Well, they sold out a game. The Georgia Florida game was sold out.
Georgia Florida, right? But I mean, basically, the entire season is blacked out.
In
Jacksonville.
It's a difficult time for Jacksonville. What we're doing now is we've now read every lease of all those teams. We know what it takes to move every single one of those teams, and we're putting together the finances that says we can go and say, Mr. Roski, and say, I'm going to pay you this amount of money for your team. Sell it to us, please.
Now, is part of when the teams move, and several teams have moved, you know, the Rams moved, the Raiders moved, the Oilers moved, a huge part of this
the Browns
move,
moved.
Right.
Yeah.
Is relocation fee that
yes,
the other owners demand. Would that come out of Ed Roski's pocket? Is that part of the thing you have to figure out?
Well, that's part of the deal. It depends how much you're going to pay for the team.
Right.
You know, you could say, I'll pay you this, but you know, you work out the relocation payment and it's coming out of your piece, or we're going to pay you this because we have to save some aside for the relocation payment, and we really don't know what that payment is. So
it's not a predetermined number.
Oh, no.
It needs to be negotiated.
You know, my guess is the one that coming here will be the largest.
So when you say a relocation payment, that's a payment to all the rest of the owners in the league?
Yeah, it gets divided 31 ways.
Gets 31 ways.
Houston paid almost $1 billion, didn't they?
No,
that was for the team.
They paid $700 million
for
the team.
Right. And then they had to pay relocation fee. What was that?
No, they didn't have to pay. They were a new franchise.
That's
so
right.
They're $700 million.
They just paid the expansion fee.
Right.
So have any of these teams that have moved the last like four, Rams, Raiders, Oilers, did they have to pay relocation fees?
The Rams had to.
Okay.
I think Baltimore had to when they moved, you know, to Baltimore. The Raiders did not pay because
and
they
the
always
reason,
claimed they had
they
the right
never
to go back
anybody.
And forth.
Yeah,
They're
they
just...
never. Well, they wouldn't pay anyway. They would just make
true.
You go to court. But John, and we're talking to John Simpkin, who's our buddy from Majestic Realty, who's one of the men behind bringing the NFL back to Southern California. That train is now moving after a long time of being stuck at the station. It's now moving, and John, nice enough to come in and update us whenever we ask him, which is really cool. One of the reasons that you say it's going to be the highest relocation fee ever is because the Los Angeles market in general, people look at as a cash cow, right? They look at you can charge top dollar for tickets, number two TV market, all those things contribute to what you anticipate will be this big number.
Well,
right?
it's the other guys want to participate in the value that's going to be increased, and our argument will be we're going to increase your value, so it shouldn't be that high, and so that's a whole negotiation that's going to happen.
Right.
You know, but what we really have is we have this tremendous market. You know, I've told you. You know, one out of every 19 people in the United States of America live within an hour drive on a Sunday of that site. And so that's three times Dallas's market. You know, Washington's got two teams. It's four times that market.
Right,
you know? So
right.
It's a huge market for the National
Football. The two-team thing, you mentioned one of the times we've talked to you that it's a possibility when this stadium gets built that two teams would play in it. Is that still a possibility?
I'm the only one, but I think it's a probability, not a possibility.
Really?
We've been mandated to design the stadium for two teams.
So you're building four locker rooms?
We don't have to build four locker rooms because there won't be two games at the same
time.
Right,
right. Three locker rooms.
Three locker rooms, and you got two home locker rooms, two facilities all in the stadium for both of the home teams. We can go through and they can play either on a Saturday and a Sunday or a Monday and a Thursday or a Saturday and a Thursday. And so the whole stadium is designed around that. We only need one, though, to build the stadium.
Gotcha.
Our whole financial model is based on only having one, but the league wants to, you know, they have seven problems. They can solve two of them with one stadium.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Now, has the league actually signed off on all aspects of this? They're like, yeah, go. We like the stadium. We love the stadium. It's perfect. Go have at them.
Well, they've seen everything.
Yeah.
And we, you know, I met with them just last Tuesday. They were in town, and we took them out to dinner, and we went through the whole model, and we talked about all the things that we're going to do. They now are asking to show us your final financing plan. Stadium design and everything, they're fine with. They like it. They think it's intriguing. The fact that we're going to bring the suites and the club seats closer to the field than in any other building is interesting.
We should point out, too, it's a very different model than we've all seen the Jerry Jones stadium down in
Dallas. Oh, yeah.
Down
number
Dallas.
One, it's not a dome.
Right. It's almost, in a lot of ways, it's the opposite of that. It is, as opposed to being this gigantic bowl, it's much more Southern Californian in that it's outdoors, actually that it's sort of built into a hillside, which is really cool. It's much greener, much more economic, or much more environmentally friendly, mm-hmm. I think. It's a very different feel than you'd get from that sort of the new Dallas stadium.
Well, everybody builds for their market.
Right.
You know, our market is environmental, our market is outdoors, our market is minimalist, but making it as cool as Hollywood can be, and that's frankly what we got. We have one side of the thing built into the hillside. We water the outside of the building. It's grass.
Yeah.
On the other side, we have this sleek tower, just like what you've got here at LA Live. You know, all the angles and the glass and the granite and steel and all that is going to be off the charts fancy.
Now, one of the things that you, last time we talked to you, you made clear is that the shovel doesn't go into the ground until you get a team.
Correct.
Is that ironclad? Mm-hmm. Like, this thing's not getting built until a team agrees to move?
Correct.
Okay. You know,
because we're paying for it, 100%.
Right.
And so
there's no taxpayer money in this?
No. In the land, what's going to happen is we make sure we get clear about it. The city of industry has to prepare the land.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we're paying the debt service on their bonds.
Got it.
Because we don't have anything yet to collect, we're actually going to pay their debt service. So at the end of the day, even their money we'll pay for.
Okay.
And so at the end of the day, that's why we say there's no public money in the building at all.
So you say best case scenario is 2010.
Very unlikely, but best case.
Oh, that's very unlikely. So mm-hmm. we're way more likely 2011.
100%
for 2011.
2011. 100%.
Oh, wait, wow. Now let me throw. We've only got about a minute and a half left here.
And how do you keep it a secret once you start?
You don't. You go to the.
I think once it. Well, I'm not going to tell anybody. You know,
right.
If Steve Mason can't get it out of me, nobody
will.
Can.
No, I will not tell anyone.
All right, John. Is there a scenario under which an existing owner would say, "Look, I don't want to sell you my team, but I'll move there."
Mm-hmm.
Then do you build?
Yes. But he has to sell a part of the team.
Okay.
Ed has told him that that he wants controlling
interest.
He wants to be the controlling owner, which is great. If we get Ed Roski as the controlling owner of God, that'd be the best thing that happened. But, you know, there's only two teams, maybe three, that are available to buy the whole team and move it. The other four, we can only buy a portion of.
Yeah, don't buy the Rams. I grew up a big Ram fan. They left me. It'd be like
Rams,
going back to your old girlfriend.
I think the Rams would be totally
fine. You know.
The only team that I don't really want is the Raiders.
Oh, that'd be
we
great.
Bring
what
out
are
all
you
those
talking
Raiders.
About?
Wait,
those
did you
people,
guys take out who's going to support which team?
No,
you've been arguing with each other
people,
all afternoon.
Those poor people in Walnut, if the Raiders come.
Oh,
I mean,
it'd
let's
be, great.
Be honest.
The Walnutians?
The Walnutians? Those Walnutians?
We could bring Al in on a chariot.
I don't want the Raiders in my
like
backyard.
Weekend at Bernie's. Al would barely be alive, be dragging him through there on a horse.
All right, so let's just, before we let you go, because I know you got a bunch of other stuff to do here, but and you're making a big presentation.
You got to meet with more important people in suits than us.
Nobody's more important than you guys.
So the Jaguars would probably be the likeliest team.
He's good, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he'll always come back around.
Yeah, he's really good. You know, they are one of the teams that we're talking to. Yes.
Right. And I can just tell by the arched eyebrow that might, is there something? Yeah.
There are no
arched,
yeah. Yeah, get out of here. All right, John, good luck with everything. Do us a favor and keep us posted. Would
no,
you
no,
please?
I appreciate you guys letting us bring you up to speed. It really is going to be exciting. And it's moving a lot faster than people realize.
All right.
Good. Well, I hope we're helping here.
You're not hurting.
Yeah, because we're pushing.
We'll stir the pot whenever
Absolutely.
You need to.
Remember
we're
when we got those? We got those crazy people on from out there, and yelled
job.
At them a lot.
Yeah,
you know.
I remember. I remember you guys when you know you were doing the television show.
You
in the
probably
morning.
Remember us when we were making fun of Joel Wax because he was opposing Staples.
And where is he today? Out of business.
Yeah, he's working at a museum in New York. That's exactly. He's out of town
we
because of Mason in Ireland.
You know what? We built the rail that he ran out of town on.
All right. That's fabulous.
Thanks, John.
All right,
thanks,
John.
Guys.
Thanks, Megs. Appreciate it.
In studio with us right now, Doug Christie, longtime NBA star. Doug, what's up?
How you boys doing?
Hey, right out of the gate. Right out of the gate with a Mark Schott impression. Hey, how much did it surprise you that Houston beat the Lakers the other night?
It didn't surprise me a whole lot. I really think that the Lakers are going to see some bumps in the road just because, obviously, you don't have Powell. You're bringing in Ron Artest. He's new. And they just don't have continuity. And that is a word that really kind of goes around the Lakers a lot of the time because they're really based off of that with the triangle offense.
All right. Now, a couple things about that game, though, that you could maybe explain to us better. You know, we can't understand how a team with the Lakers' height mm-hmm. could be out-rebounded 60-38. How does that happen against a team like Houston? Doug, they didn't play a guy taller than 6'8". Carl Landry and Chuck Hayes were the tallest guys they played in the game, and the rebounds finished 60-38 Houston.
Yeah.
Why do you think?
Well, a lot of things. I would say that you can't teach height, but you can't teach hustle at the same time either. You got to. Those guys were out there. They were working hard, and that's some things that really Rick Adelman lets those guys go. They crash the boards, but at the same time, when you say that C word, that continuity again, you're getting shots out of the Lakers' offense that probably guys aren't in the best position to grab those rebounds and get some offensive rebounds and put them back. But more than anything, I thought that I saw a Houston team that's coming in and they're trying to make a statement that, hey, last year was, a rivalry, quote-unquote.
Right.
We want to see that again, and that's the type of effort that we're bringing.
Yeah, they are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the best-looking team in the world. It doesn't look like it should work. You've got Chuck Hayes, who's built like a tree stump. You've got Carl Landry, who's kind of got the same build. You've got an undersized point guard, but who's incredibly fast. A lot of times they'll have Lowry out there with him. He's got incredible quicks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the length, seemingly.
And they're missing both their stars.
Yeah, and they're missing McGrady. They're missing Yao. They've lost a defender like Artest, and yet they seem to get by on scrap and heart and energy, really.
Well, this is, I think, a staple or signature of Rick Adelman teams, because when we were in Sacramento, we would miss Chris, we would miss Mike Bibby, and all of a sudden Bobby Jackson stepped in, Hedo Turkoglu stepped in. So by them not having guys, I don't think it's a big thing, because they're guys on the bench who can play. Now they're getting the opportunity to play, and they're playing as hard as they possibly can, because when these guys come back, they still want to be out there. So this is something that Houston, I think, you're going to see. They're going to go through. They don't have a target on their back right now, so they're going to beat a lot of teams early.
You were, at times in your career, asked to guard players that were smaller and quicker than you. They were quicker than you, but you were bigger than them.
Mm-hmm.
Where did the Lakers fail in the way they attempted to guard Aaron Brooks the other night?
Well, I think one thing with him, you have to get the ball out of his hands. So when he comes off of those pick-and-rolls things, you're going to have to force him over the top, trap him, get the ball out of his hands, then deny him, don't let him get it back. Now, at the same time, with a guy like that, sometimes you got to let him go to the hoop. Somebody has to put him on his back. Let him know that you can't keep coming in here, little guy. And as far as jump shots, I think really that's what you want him shooting, because when he misses one or two, all of a sudden, it's a lot of pressure on you. All of a sudden, now you have to make them with a hand in your face, and all of a sudden, then he starts missing them.
Okay, so we were talking about this before you got here. And a lot of fans, Doug, have been calling the shows, particularly the postgame show the other night, about how the Lakers should divide those minutes at the two-guard spot, or in their case, the one-guard spot, because Kobe's going to stay in the game.
Yeah.
All right, so if it's you, and you might be a coach one day, you certainly have the personality for it, and you've got Jordan Farmar and Shannon Brown and your veteran starter Derek Fisher there, how do you divide that up? What are you looking for if you're the coach and you want one of those guys to kind of take over that spot?
Well, I think it's really going to depend on matchups, because you look at Farmar, he looks pretty quick. He can stick guys. Then you got Shannon, who is very athletic, who can go, he can grab rebounds. So it looks to me like it's, kind of Phil is deciding on the fly which guy is really going that night.
Is Fisher still valuable to you at this stage of his career?
I call him Finishing Fisher, because he's going to finish the game. He's going to knock down his free throws. He plays good defense. Right now isn't the time to look at the Lakers and say, this is the Lakers. Right now is the time to look at the Lakers and say, oh, you got some bumps and bruises. Kobe's playing way too much. He's having to, for them to win right now, Kobe pretty much has to score 40, or somebody else has to really step up. And I don't think we've seen that yet.
And by the way, Kobe leads the league in scoring.
Yeah, he leads the league in scoring and still battling an injury. Obviously, but I don't think they've got a choice right now. I mean, he really has to lead the league in scoring, I think, for this team to keep its head above water over the next few weeks or in the past few weeks until Pau Gasol gets back. I mean, he's a huge scoring factor for them.
Yes, no question. And if you look at it this way, guys, last year when you had Pau Gasol, you had the ability to go to Pau and still win games and have Kobe sometimes be your second choice. Well, goodness gracious, they don't have that right now. He's the first choice. Guys are double teaming him, triple teaming him. So if they can go to a Bynum, or Odom, Artest first, and then have Kobe kind of come in and just do his thing when he's ready to and close the game out, that's when the Lakers are special.
Doug Christie, as usual, knocking it out of the park here on 710 ESPN. All right, Doug, Allen Iverson's available. If you're a GM, you take a chance on him?
If I'm in New York, I take a chance. I think it's good for basketball. It's good for the NBA. It's good for Allen Iverson because he's going to get to play. He's going to get the ball. He's going to get to shoot. The stage can't get any bigger unless he comes to Los Angeles. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. You know, they're in a really
limbo.
That is
the word now, that they're the team that has circled Allen Iverson and said, you know what, they're not ruling it out. They haven't said yes,
right,
but they're not ruling it out as of right now.
Anywhere else, I thought about it, I don't see a lot of fits because he doesn't really want to come off the bench. That's a team he doesn't have to come off the bench. You can start him.
All right, let me throw you my crazy idea that Mason says is stupid with two O's.
Yes,
absolutely.
Wow. By the way, it gets no stupider than when you spell it with two O's.
But I threw it to Jalen Rose yesterday, and Jalen actually liked it, but he says there's a flaw in it. I think if I was Cleveland, I would call Allen Iverson and put him on a 10-day. And this is where Jalen says my idea breaks down, because he doesn't think AI would ever accept a 10-day. But let's say, for the sake of our discussion, that he would. And, you know, they're starting Anthony Parker opposite Mo Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Give that to AI. Say, look, you can start, and we're going to try it for 10 days. He'd be on a team, Doug, with LeBron, Shaq, you know, Mo Williams. I mean, and all of a sudden, Cleveland has a great situation at its off guard. And if he doesn't, you know, be a team guy, if he acts up, you just release him at the end of the 10-day. Am I nuts?
Well, no, I don't say you're nuts, because that's an experiment that if he'd take a 10-day, obviously it would work. But the problem that I see is you already have Allen Iverson and Mo Williams. That's pretty much what you got there. Then if you play him at the two guard, it puts too much defensive pressure on LeBron James, because he's not going to be able to stick the twos in the East without someone coming, you know, because they're going to put him in the box.
So is right. Iverson a defensive liability at this point of his career?
If he plays the two guard. If he plays the point guard, I don't see him being a problem. I think that he can stay in front of those guys, and at the same time, he's going to put offensive pressure on those guys on the other end of the floor.
But, you know, the problem to me is, at this point in his career, and this goes for guys like Stephon Marbury too, you can't ask a guy who's devolved into this selfish, it's all about me guy to all of a sudden become a complimentary guy on a team that's contending for a championship. I just don't think Allen Iverson has that gene. I don't think Stephon Marbury has that gene.
Although
they got to be the star,
you know,
or bust.
In the history of the league, Steve, there have been guys that have done that. I mean,
yes, there have been.
Bill Walton did it. He went to Boston and became a sixth man. Mark Aguirre did it. When he was an NBA All-Star, he got traded to Detroit and became the fourth option.
But
behind
we just
Isaiah
found out
and Joe Dumars
he wasn't
and stuff
willing.
Like that.
He was signed to be a sixth man.
Oh, I don't
he
think
refused to be a sixth man.
I don't think
man.
Your point is off the mark. I think your point is fair. But I'm just saying, the logic is flawed in that, Doug, you've probably seen guys in the league that used to be the guy and will take a lesser role if it means they might get a ring. I mean, Malone and Payton tried it here in L.A. They made it all the way to the finals, and then it blew up, but that's still a pretty good run.
I mean, it's no different than real life. This is just a microcosm. You have to evolve, and you're not always going to be the guy. And I think that if Allen could just get on a team, accept the six-man role, be that Vinnie Johnson kind of guy that comes in, gives you instant offense, it would keep him at that special level that he's always been throughout his whole career. It's just I don't think anyone's been able to get through to him to make him understand, or he hasn't been on a good enough team for him to understand, because he's been the guy his whole career.
Yeah. And I hope nothing but the best for him. He certainly has been great for the league. He's been a tremendous star. But there comes a time where you got to get out of your own way. And if you want to extend your career, you've got to find a way to contribute in other ways. And he just seems unwilling to do that so far.
Yeah, that's why I say you look at the New York Knicks. This is a situation where they desperately need something exciting in the garden. Obviously, you bring Allen Iverson. He's going to score points. He's going to do some things because D'Antoni just has an offense to just let you go. So all of a sudden, you're looking at, you know, kind of a Steve Nash, but without all the passing.
Right.
Hey, let me ask you something about Brandon Jennings, this kid in Milwaukee that was the 10th pick in the draft. He dropped 55 the other night. He had 25 last night, and they almost beat Dallas. Dirk Nowitzki had a buzzer beater to win it for the Mavs. Doug, in this day and age, and you saw it towards the end of your career, and you actually saw it when you were at Pepperdine, there's so much scouting. I mean, there's AAU teams, and there's, you know, they're basically watching kids who can play from the time they're 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah.
How did 9 teams miss out on this guy and let him go 10th in the draft, including the Knicks who want to play up-tempo. How does that happen?
Well, I really look at the fact that although it was good for him to go to Europe, it was bad in the sense that he didn't dominate like what we saw the other night with 55 points. He wasn't doing that in Europe, and these are supposed to be just below NBA-level players, so guys are looking and saying, well, maybe he doesn't have that thing. Well, when you put him in a situation with guys around him that have the talent, and that's pretty much what you're doing by going to the NBA, all of a sudden now you can play on a whole different level. He has the quickness. He can score. He can get to the line. He's left-handed. All of those things added together equal a special player, and unfortunately somebody might lose their job.
A couple of people who passed on Brandon Jennings. Do you think that is a good template for other players to follow? The 1 year in Europe. By the way, you talk about learning experience. We always say, well, you know, it'd be great to go to college for 1 year so you have a learning experience. If you really want to have an eye-opening experience, mm-hmm. if you really want to get a broader view of the world, go to Europe and play a year.
And oh, by the way,
be a big boy. Go to Europe, see how the world works, and mm-hmm. then come back. I think that's a better experience in terms of preparation for the NBA than college basketball ever could be.
And oh, by the way, Doug, they gave him $1 million. You know,
yeah. Plus you get $1 million out of it.
Well, what do you go to college for? You go to college to get a job and put yourself in position to make money. So if you're able to go right away to make money, well, hey, you got to go to Europe. I would say that you're going to play against better talent probably in Europe than you are in college basketball. But at the same time, you're going to get something in college that you don't get in Europe, and that is more of a controlled environment to allow you to grow and, you know, do the things that you want to do. When you go to Europe, you are going to get thrown pennies at and bottles at. I mean, they're going to be coming at you.
Right.
So I think when we look at Brandon Jennings, we're looking at a kid who has already maybe evolved into a second or third year player, although he's only a rookie.
Yeah, and the, probably the leader in the rookie of the year thing. Hey, we only got a minute here before we break, but I wanted to ask you, what's going on up at Golden State? They trade Steven Jackson, and now they're going to apparently trade Monte Ellis, or at least they're shopping him. Is that one of those deals that's kind of rotten from the head down? They got a bad owner, a coach that's at the end of his career. What's your take on all that?
You know, I think that they went in a direction, and then all of a sudden, when Barron left, they saw that the direction wasn't going to pan out.
They didn't have the pieces anymore.
And now it's just kind of a fire sale, free-for-all, and they're trying to get whatever they can out of the situation because they've had some talent there, and when they were able to beat Dallas in the first round, you were seeing, okay, well, this is old school basketball, lots of points, but now I think they're just going to blow it up.
Yeah, it seems as though that's probably the right thing to do, to be honest with you. I think you want to just detonate that sucker.
Yeah, too bad, because they had lightning in a bottle 2 years ago.
Yeah, yes. It comes apart quick. All right, we'll continue with Doug Christie. Don't forget, bottom of the hour, Kia Motors Lakers shoot-around show will get started. We'll work our way towards a 7:30 tip-off at Staples Center, the Lakers versus the 5-5 Detroit Pistons. Mason and Ireland show, 710 ESPN, 710ESPN.com.
Doug, what's your take on the Clippers at this point? They're a disappointing 4-7. They don't have Blake Griffin. Do you think Mike Dunleavy lasts the season as the coach of the Clips?
If they don't make a run for the playoffs, I think maybe there might be a problem there. But, I mean, he's put this together. Obviously, you don't have Blake Griffin. He's going to make that team totally different because from the four position, he's going to crash the boards. He's going to score. He's going to be able to get alley-oops from BD. There's so many different things that you can do with him. And you have Chris Kaman playing out of his mind
right
now. And if you can keep that, I think that they make a run. I don't know if they make the playoffs, but they make a run.
Okay, well, here's something Mason and I always talk about, that's a team that we always hear every single year. If we could get healthy, we could play with anybody. But are they allowed to say that? Because Mike's the one signing them, and he's signing a bunch of guys with injury history. Camby has injury history. Barron has injury history. I mean, was it realistic to think they'd ever be a healthy team?
No, it's hard to say because, like you said, everybody that you just named has had some type of injury, something, all the way back from when Ron Harper never had an injury. He came here and he blew out his knee. Danny Manning, everybody. It's just kind of the jinx. I don't know if you want to use that word for the Clippers.
You're not the first one to use it.
No,
yeah.
I don't think you invented this whole jinx thing. There certainly is some bad fortune with Blake Griffin. But, you know, in the other case, you know, Baron Davis has been hurt a bunch of times in his career. Marcus Camby spends a lot of time on the inactive list. So you can't necessarily, I think, be surprised when those guys do get hurt. This is 710 ESPN, 710ESPN.com.